"Do we have to be that fast?" asked Jennets.
"It helps," said Pox. "Suppose your opponent is. You need every scrap of speed and strength you can build. I'm faster than I was, and I hope I'll keep improving."
"I'll never do it," said Sim. "I'm strong, I know I'm strong, and I thought that would be enough. I could beat up anyone in my village, but I never was fast."
"You'll get faster," said Pox firmly. "When I was a recruit, Siger thumped my ribs and yelled faster, faster at me every day, and finally I got faster. You will too, unless your ribs are tougher than mine were." They laughed, a little nervously. From across the yard came a shout.
"Hey, Sabin, come here."
Pox stiffened, her head swinging automatically to look before she caught herself. She felt tears sting her eyes and blinked fiercely. Sabin was a common enough name. She'd have to get used to it.
"Pox?"
They all looked concerned. Volya went on.
"Did you know him before? Sabin, I mean?"
Pox shook her head and took a deep, steadying breath.
"No, a different Sabin, a good friend. We'd been together since we came in, and he was with me on the trip you heard about. But he died."
"Oh.
Well, it happens. We're soldiers, after all. It's just, there wasn't another Sabin in the company, so when I hear the name, I think, I'll get used to it, I suppose. Now let's get back to work. Sim, you and Jennets this time, and Carrie and Volya." They started again, and Pox kept after them until time for the midday meal. Within a week, Pox lost Sim to Krakolnya's cohort. She was glad. A slow archer might live longer than a slow swordsman. Less welcome was the change in cohort position resulting from the number of recruits. Normally, recruits were kept to the rear, except for a few who had showed promise, but Arkelin decided that they should be close to their veteran instructors, which meant that Pox ended up as file sixth. She understood the reasons, but didn't like it, even so. There were other changes. Horse-faced Pont was now Arkelin's junior captain, and Velici took Font's place with Krakolnya. The Duke had hired a captain to replace Sedgwick. Peska, a dark, dour man who had been a watch captain at court in Pargon. He spoke common with a curious accent that Pox had never heard. She was glad her cohort had Pont instead, though Bara had no complaints about him. This year, Pox could not ask Donag for advance information, and no one in the cohort seemed to know what the Duke planned, except trouble for Siniava. When they marched out of Valdaire on the southern road, the one to Zardus that Pox remembered, she expected to see Halverix, but instead they met the Golden Company a few miles from the city. Aesil Madeira, mounted on a chestnut horse and armored in gold-washed mail, rode beside the Duke. Her company fell in behind. Pox eyed her, the only woman in Arrhenius to command her own mercenary company. What would that be like? What could she be like? But the next day they turned aside, through Baron Kadali's land, and Golden Company stayed on the road south. Through a steady rain they marched easily, guided by a wiry dark man who had come with the Baron. Pox thought he looked like a juggler, but Stamel laughed when she said it.
"Juggler? Tur, no, I'll admit the jugglers you see in Valdaire are his subjects, more than likely. That's one of the woods tribes, their king or prince or whatever.
But why?"
Stamel shrugged. "I don't know. They have a lot of power in the forests of Arrhenius, I've heard. The Duke's always made friends with him. Maybe he wants safe passage through some forest."
Whatever he was, he led them by ways that avoided all hazards of bog and mud. 3 days later he was gone, but they marched easily beside a larger stream with a village in sight. They were met, in the fields above the village, by an old man in a long robe and a fat man in helmet and breastplate, commanding 10 unarmored youths with scythes and pikes. Pox could not hear what the Duke said to them, but the youths suddenly trailed their weapons in the mud and turned away. The village had a cobbled square, and a group of taller buildings around it. Pox looked for an inn, hoping for ale. She saw a battered sign with a picture of a tower by a river. The sign read, "Inzing Poxnor." The inn yard was large, but part of the building had been torn down to build a stable. They marched through, to camp on the far side where one stream joined another. Across the stream was a rising slope of farmland, and on the southern horizon, a large stony escarpment running roughly west to east. It reminded Pox
of the high moors behind Three Firs, and looked like nothing else she had seen in the south.
"That's the Middle Marches," said Devlin to a curious recruit. "Once you're up on those heights, it's sheep farming land, and downstream, maybe a day's march from here, is Iphis."
"Who claims the Middle Marches?" asked someone else.
"Whoever can."
Devlin turned to look at the fire.
"There's petty barons enough, near the river, like Codaly. Iphis claims some of it. More barons downstream until Vonja. Up on the high ground, it's hard to say. There was a Count Somebody when I first came south, but he died. I heard he left no heir of the body, a nephew or something in Pliuni. The Honeycat tries to claim it, as he claims everything else. I think when he took Pliuni, he captured the nephew or married him to a daughter or niece. Or maybe that was another place."
"What's beyond it?" asked Pox.
"Straight south?" she nodded. "Well, Andrasat. That's ruled by a count, if I remember. An old family, anyway, and very powerful. I think the Duke hired to Andrasat once, before I joined. They've got only one city, Cortes Andras. They say its inner fortifications have never been broken."
"Does the Honeycat control Andrasat?"
"Turno, the Count, Jedrin, I think his name is, he hates him. Then south of Andrasat are the South Marches. The Honeycat claims that, and for all I know, he may have a right to it. He also claims the cities along the Colloquy, and the Horn Bay ports at the Immerhoft. That's Sibili and Cha on the river, and Confair, Corin, and Sul on the coast."
"How did he ever claim Pliuni?" asked Pox.
"Just took it. Waited until the Sire of Westland was fighting up in the western mountains and marched up and took it. Pliuni was a free city, but had always looked to the Sire for protection."
"What about the rest of the port cities?" asked Arnyi.
"I don't know. I've heard the names, but I don't know exactly where they are or who controls them. Seafang, that's a pirate city, and Immersdan, at the mouth of the Immer. Let's see, Zith, Aliuna, Servret, Anzal, and Immer something. No, Ka-Immer. Some are pirate cities and some are legitimate traders, so they say."
Iphis, when they came to it the next day, seemed small and dingy after Valdair. A walled city of no more than 8,000 or 9,000, surrounded by ploughland and orchards. It was bleak in winter. They camped outside the city, on a long field sloping to the river, and wagons rolled out with provisions. With the wagons came guildmasters to confer with the Duke. Recruits and veterans alike gaped at their distinctive dress, the short pointed fur-edged hats, long pointed sleeves, and oddly cut jackets trimmed in elaborate braid. They stayed at Iphis several days. On the second night, Pox took advantage of her seniority to enter the city. Stamil had told them of a good new inn near the east gate, the Laughing Fox, so they ignored the Falcon, the Golden Ladder, and the Juggler to work their way across town to Stamil's choice. It was new, clean, and the landlord seemed friendly. The ale was good, too, and not expensive. Pox ordered a fried fruit pie, and Vic decided on a slab of spice bread. Soon they were enjoying an impromptu party. When Pox decided to leave, two of the group weren't ready to come and stayed behind. "Just to finish the jug," they said.
"Don't come back too late," teased Vic, "and expect us to take your slot on guard, because I'm going to get my beauty sleep."
"Beauty sleep or sleep with a beauty?" asked a townsman at the next table, emboldened by his flask of wine as he eyed Pox.
"Sleep," replied Vic cheerfully. "She's on guard before I am."
Which was not true, but made a good exit. Pox had already turned away, trusting Vic to find a good answer. He always did, with everyone. They got back to camp, shortly before the watch change. Stamil was not pleased to find that two had stayed behind.
"Do you think they'll be back on time, or had I better go roust 'em out?"
"Sif's not on until late watch," said Pox. "He's got a strong head, and I don't think he'll be late. I don't know Tarn that well, he's Doran's, but surely Sif will keep an eye on him."
"I hope. It seems a clean enough place, but it is on the far side of town. If they're not back by mid-watch, let me know. I'll want to find 'em."
The guard assignment had Pox partnered with Jennets. They had a short stretch on the east side of camp, from the horse lines to the entrance. It was nearly mid-watch when she heard a wavering song from the lane that led to Iphis. As the noise came nearer, she could hear two voices. The guards at the camp entrance snickered. Pox hoped it was Sif and Tarn, but they did sound drunk.
like the bee, so swift to anger, but her honey's rich and sweet.
One of the two stopped to cough, then picked up the song again. I don't fear her painful stinger, but the honey I will...
Quiet there!
Doran, the watch captain, had heard the noise. Pox heard a hiccup, and indistinct mutters from the pair.
Come up to the light, said Doran, and give the password.
Pox saw two shadowy figures approach the torches at the camp entrance, and heard them stumble over the password.
You're a disgrace, snapped Doran. Veterans who don't know their limit. Why do you think we didn't let the others into town, eh? This is no campaign for getting drunk and blabbing in taverns. And what happened to your cloak, Tarn?
Pox could not hear the answer, if he made any. Doran cleared her throat and spat.
Your sergeants will see to you, she said. Wait here.
She strode off.
Is it that bad to get drunk?
Asked Janet softly.
I used to.
It depends, said Pox. They turned back toward the horse lines. Anything you say in a tavern will travel. If you get drunk and talk about the company, where we're marching or when, that's bad.
I see, said Janet.
And then if you're drunk, said Pox, you're more likely to be taken by slavers or attacked by thieves. Or if it makes you mean, you might brawl and that makes trouble for the company. Of course, if it's a cohort or company banquet, that's different. Next day, Pox saw Sif grooming mules under the sarcastic guidance of the mule skinner. She was sure that Doran's sergeant had found something equally unpleasant for Tarn. When they left Iphis, they angled across pastures toward the middle marches. By nightfall, they were camped under the ridge. Sheep trails led up to it. The next day, they spent climbing, winding back and forth along the face of the slope. To the north, their view broadened. They could see Iphis with its wall, and downstream another wall and tower that Stamel said was Foss Fort. A cold wind scoured the height. They passed outcrops of gray stone splashed with orange and brown lichens. The outcrops grew rougher, formed into long lines like low walls. They passed through a gap in one, shoulder high on either side. It ran along the slope, as far as Pox could see. Above it, the rocks disappeared once more under thick turf, still winter tawny. The slope eased. They camped that night near that natural stone wall. They reached the broad top of the ridge in less than an hour of marching the next morning. Pox looked at the vast and empty land to the south. The great ridge seemed to fall slightly to the southwest, cleft here and there by steep watercourses furred with trees. The sky arched blue and nearly cloudless. They could see for miles, could see, for instance, a galloping horseman far ahead. None of the officers seemed concerned, so Pox thought it must be one of their own messengers. Although they crossed many winding sheep trails, they saw neither sheep nor shepherds. Pox realized that they were more visible than a flock of stone-gray sheep. Of course, any shepherd would move out of their path. That afternoon, they camped where a pool had formed below several springs. A small, clear stream ran away from the low end of the pool and dropped into a narrow cleft in the rock. It was just after lunch, on the next day, when Pox heard horns blowing in the south. The sound trembled in the still air. She peered south, trying to see something. Far down the slope was a knot of horsemen, but the horn calls had come from farther away than that. The thunder of hooves began to shake the ground. Stamel called them into fighting formation. Other sergeants were yelling. They unslung shields and drew their swords. Pox watched her recruits. Volya looked pale, but eager. Carrie was frowning and waggling his blade a little, as if reminding himself of the drill. The back of Janet's neck had reddened. She eased her own shoulders and took a deep breath as the riders neared. They wore brown and gray tunics, oddly loose and flapping, and carried lances with no decoration. The leading horses slowed, and the foremost rider hailed the Duke. Arcalan rode forward with him. Once more, Pox could not hear what was said. She looked at her recruits again. They were too stiff.
Easy, she said. Breathe slowly.
Carrie's eyes slid toward hers, and he drew a shaky breath. Arcalan turned to the column and signaled the sergeants.
Sheath your blades, said Stamel.
Pox eased her sword back in place. Some of the recruits were so tense it took them two tries. They waited. Pox glanced down and saw a fresh green blade poking up through the mat of frost-burned turf. Ahead, almost under Janet's left foot, was a flat rosette of leaves with two tiny white flowers on top. Almost spring, thought Pox. She looked around for other flowers but saw none. The riders were turning their horses away. The captains came back to their commands, but the Duke and his squires moved up beside the leading rider.
"We've a fast march to make," said Arkelin, "with a fight at the end of it. Take a drink now and re-sling your shields, but be ready to shift position at any time."
No one had much to say, as they started south again at a faster pace. An arc of riders went before them, and others rode on their flanks. Pox looked hard at the drab tunics. When one rider bent to untwist a rein, she caught a glimpse of Rose through the loose sleeve. So, they were Clarts after all. As they went, they heard horns again, deep and high, long note and sharp staccato signals. It was hard to keep the pace even. The horns and the steepening downhill slope pulled them forward ever faster. Pox could see now that they were coming to a broad saddle between the high ground behind them and a similar rise ahead. To left and right, the land fell steeply into deep gorges. Beyond the saddle, shining in the late afternoon sun, rose a tower. Around it writhed a dark mass that Pox realized must be an army. They marched on. Pox wondered if they would make that distance by dark, and whose side were they on? As they started across the saddle, more drab-clad riders came up from the broken ground to either side. The slope rose under their feet toward the tower. Pox could not see now, for the riders ahead, but the crash and roar of battle came clearly. Rising excitement swamped the fatigue of the day's march. The riders pulled their baggy tunics over their heads, and Clart cavalry, rose and white, glowed in the slanting sun. Arkelin leaned to speak to Stammel. He nodded, turning to the cohort. "Shields," he said. Pox took her own shield and made sure her recruits had theirs secure. They drew swords. As they advanced, shifting from marching column to battle order, Krakolnia's cohort moved off to their right flank.
"Slow advance, keep in line there," yelled Stammel.
Pox heard the Clarts yipping as they spurred to the attack. Dust rose in clouds. A great yell from before them. More horn signals. The Duke appeared out of the dust to ride beside them. His squires clustered around him. Pox wondered if they could see any better from the saddle. The Duke pointed ahead. One of the squires took off at a gallop. Arkelin jogged up from the rear of the cohort and rode beside the Duke. Pox could hear nothing but battle sounds. Arkelin dropped back, and in a few moments, Doran's cohort came alongside on their left. Pox saw the Duke's head turn. She looked ahead. Through the swirling dust, she could see struggling figures, even the colors. Green there, black and yellow, and more green. The tower loomed higher as they neared, its parapet above the dust, and Pox saw blue-clad archers. The Duke put a light hunting horn to his lips and blew a rapid five-note signal. At once it was answered by a call that Pox recognized as Hallveric. The battle surged toward them as the green-clad soldiers retreated. Their opponents roared in triumph, a sound that stopped abruptly as they saw behind the fleeing Hallverics the solid ranks of Fallani. Another horn call, and the Hallverics slipped left. The enemy fighters crashed into the Phalan's lines. Arkelin's cohort, nearly in the center of the arc formed by Clarts, Fallani, and Hallverics, took the brunt of that charge. Pox had no time for a last encouraging word to her recruits. She was tightly engaged. Despite the hours of practice, Pox found the curved blade strokes of the enemy hard to counter. She took several minor cuts before killing her first opponent, and was just in time to help carry with the one who had shattered his shield. She fought on, trying to keep an eye on her recruits when she could. The cohort had nearly halted under the enemy rush, but they had not faltered, and the front rank still held a good line.
"Arkelin's cohort, drive 'em!"
It was the Duke's voice from behind them. The cohort surged forward, flattening the arc as they came. The enemy softened, rolling left away from their pressure. Still, the fighting raged. Pox had no time to wonder how the battle was going. Janet's went down in front of her. She lunged across him to strike the enemy who was about to kill him. Janet screamed as she stepped on his arm. She shifted a pace and hoped someone would get him away safely. His attacker fought wildly. She finally dropped him with a thrust to the neck. She spared a glance for Janet's and didn't see him. "Good," she thought, and thrust at the oncoming soldiers. The enemy in front melted away, though by the noise the left flank was busy enough. Pox looked around and spotted Volya and Kerry. Volya was bleeding from a bad slash to her right arm. Kerry's shield had fallen apart, though he still clutched the grip. "Kerry, pick up a good shield. Drop that." He looked at her in surprise, then at his arm. She watched until he stripped off the broken one and picked up an enemy shield nearby. "Volya, get that wound tied up. Drop back. One of the sergeants will tell you where to go." Other wounded were shifting to the rear, and those still sound drew together. Pox looked for Arkelin or the Duke. She spotted Arkelin on their left front. Stammel was with him. Arkelin waved a signal to Krakolnia, who sent his cohort forward. The Clarts, having rearmed, rode up on the far right, and the right wing wheeled, compressing the enemy against Doran's cohort and the Halverics. Pox still could not tell how many they faced. They fought on. The enemy lines, though wavering, hardly seemed to diminish. The sun edged down. As light faded out of the sky, the enemy made one more frantic attempt to break through. Favored by the downward slope, they penetrated between the Halverics and Doran's cohort, pouring away downhill in the darkness. Pox heard curses from the Clarts, who spurred after them recklessly. Pox hoped the Duke would not command a foot pursuit. She was suddenly almost too tired to move. Arkelin rode back to them, talking to a Clart captain. Then he turned to Stammel. "Take them to the enemy camp. The Clarts hold it. Set up a strong perimeter. I think Doran's cohort is pursuing, but some of them may circle back. I'll be near the tower entrance if you need me." He rode toward the tower. Light spilled from its narrow windows. Pox wondered who held it. The enemy camp was full of supplies. The Clarts had overridden some of the tents, but most were still standing. Cattle roasted over a long trench fire. Pox's mouth watered. She and the other veterans stood guard while uninjured recruits helped the surgeons and set up camp. She wished she knew how her recruits were, and her friends. She'd seen Vic and Arnie only at a distance. It seemed long before Stammel returned to the perimeter. Pox cleaned her sword and sheathed it, then slipped off her shield and stretched. Her shoulders were stiff, where the back straps had dug in. She hadn't fought in a pack, except in drill. Reluctantly, she picked up the shield, yawning. Now she could feel every cut and bruise. The wind blew the smell of roasting meat past her nose, and her stomach knotted. At last, a recruit came, grease still streaking his chin, to relieve her post. Stammel met her as she turned away. "Here." He handed her a slab of beef on a split loaf. "I meant to get to you earlier. You'll want to see Jennets. His arm's broken. Volya needed stitching, but she's up and around. Carrie's fine. Hardly scratched." Pox mumbled her thanks past a mouthful of food. "Whose tower?" she asked, after swallowing a huge lump of beef. "Andrasat's. Their colors are blue and gold. You'll see tomorrow." "Why didn't they come out? I thought they hated Siniava." "They do. But they've only got 40 or 50 in there. They don't want to lose the tower to anyone, not even us." Pox nodded as she ate, and walked on to the surgeon's tent. It had evidently belonged to an enemy officer. It was large and divided by yellow hanging panels into several rooms. Jennets lay on a straw pallet, with his shoulders propped up on a frame, his left arm bound in splints. Volya sat beside him with a flask. They both looked pale, but well enough. "Have you had any food yet?" asked Pox. They both nodded. "Good. I'll finish my supper." She squatted beside Jennets. "Did they give you numb wine?"
"Yes, they did."
His voice was slightly blurred. "I'm sorry I stepped on you," said Pox, "but that..."
"That's all right. It was broken already. That's why I fell."
"It's a good thing it was your shield arm," said Pox. "You won't be fighting for weeks, but it won't be as hard to retrain. You did well, Jennets. I suppose Stammel told you that."
"Yes, but I forgot which strokes after a while, and it was so fast."
"I forgot, too, in my first battle. That's when I got the big scar on my leg. As Stammel said to me, we'll just drill you more until you can't forget." Jennets managed a shaky grin. Pox turned to Volya. "Volya, you did well, too, but I could see if your shield work was much better. Now, did the surgeons tell you to stay with Jennets?"
"Yes. They said give him more numb wine if he needed it."
"I can do that, and let you get some sleep. We'll all be pulling watch tonight, and fighting again tomorrow, I expect."
"Oh, I couldn't sleep. I'm still too excited."
Volya's eyes were very bright. Pox sighed. "Volya, You're tired, whether you know it or not. Go roll up in your cloak, and if you aren't asleep in a half glass, you can come back and take over for me.
Volya got up reluctantly and handed Pox the flask of numb wine.
And don't start talking to anyone. That will keep you awake.
Volya nodded and went out. The surgeon came through from another part of the tent and looked at Pox.
Is that your blood or theirs?
Pox looked at her arm. Both, I think. Nothing serious, though.
But you've been on guard, and haven't had time to clean them. I know the story. Let me see.
With painful thoroughness, the surgeon scrubbed the various cuts she'd taken, grumbling the while.
If I could just convince you heroes that cleaning these things out does as much good, no, more good, than a healing spell. It's cheap, it's easy, they don't fester and give you fever if they're clean.
Ouch! Said Pox, as the cleaning solution stung in a slice across her hand.
Hold still. I have to see if that got into the joint. No. Lucky. Maybe we need thicker gloves.
I didn't have mine on, muttered Pox. The surgeon snorted and went on.
Are you sure you aren't hiding something else? He asked, when he had finished wrapping bandages around her hand.
Nothing else. She looked down and found that Jennet's had followed the whole proceeding with interest. So had others in the room.
Are you staying with him? Asked the surgeon.
Do you need me to? I can.
Yes, please. We've got Clart and Halveric wounded coming in, and there'll be more later. You can give him enough numb wine to make him sleep. 3 or 4 swallows more should do it. Same for the others. Call if anything goes wrong.
The surgeon passed on to the next room, and Pox lifted Jennet's head so he could drink more easily. In a few minutes, he was snoring. She glanced around at the others. They all seemed to be dozing. Pox propped the flask nearby and took off her pack to get her cloak. She wrapped it around her shoulders. From the other end of the tent came a sudden flurry that subsided after a few minutes. When she opened her eyes next, she was stiff as a board, and the surgeon was laughing at her in the lamplight.
Some watcher, he said. If you were going to sleep, you should have found a pallet and stretched out.
Pox yawned and tried to focus her eyes.
I didn't know I was going to sleep. Sorry.
She looked at Jennet's, but he slept peacefully.
No sign of fever, said the surgeon. This time get comfortable before you go back to sleep.
Pox pushed herself up, shaking her head.
I won't sleep. What watch is it, anyway?
Don't worry. Stammel came by to tell you he wouldn't need you.
And found me asleep.
Pox blushed.
Well, said the surgeon, he didn't wake you, and told me to let you sleep till dawn. That's another 4 hours.
Pox yawned again.
It's tempting.
The surgeon turned away. 3 years' experience told her to take sleep when she could find it. But now she was awake, and curiosity kept her so. With a last look at Jennet's, she left the tent and headed for the area assigned to her cohort. Keffer was snoring by the watchfire, but roused when she spoke to the sentry. He confirmed what the surgeon had said, and told her to get what sleep she could.
We'll march tomorrow. If we catch them, we'll fight.
Keffer yawned.
Clart's got many of them, but 600 or so are loose.
Pox held her hands to the fire. The night was cold after the surgeon's tent. Stammel said our losses weren't bad?
No. Not in our cohort. 3 returned veterans, 1 recruit. Doran's was harder hit, but still not bad, considering. Go on, Pox, get some sleep.
He pointed to a nearby tent. Pox edged in, found an empty space, and slept until day. Despite Keffer's prediction, they did not march the next day. Instead, they dismantled the enemy camp. Several squads went to the battlefield, returning with salvageable weapons and armor. Others cleared the camp itself of supplies. Bags of grain and beans, great jars of wine and barrels of ale. One tent held all the gear for a smith's shop, anvils, hammers, tongs, bellows, and bars and discs of rough iron. Most of this they carried into the storage cellars of the tower, each load tallied by a scribe from each company. Siger and Hofrin chose weapons to replace those damaged, and reserve supplies to take along. The enemy's mules were distributed to each company, too, along with the feed for them. From the talk she heard while working, Pox gathered that Siniava's army had come from the west. Before reaching this tower, they had taken those along the western border, and those were now garrisoned by Siniava's troops. But a survivor had escaped to warn the commander of the North Watch,
the Count of Andrasat's son-in-law. When the enemy force arrived, it found the tower sealed and well defended. Clart scouts, riding ahead of the Halverics, had discovered the siege in progress, and the Halverics attacked the besiegers. Though heavily outnumbered, they had held the enemy close under the tower walls, where the Andrasat archery could do its worst, until the rest of the Clarts and the Fallani arrived in force.
"They should have got out of here,"
said a Halveric corporal, as he and Pox dragged sacks of grain across the tower court.
"Only they thought they could break us and get rid of us, the fools, and we kept 'em busy enough they didn't think of anyone else."
"You had a rough time then," said Pox.
"Oh, we fight close order, same as you. We just drew in and let 'em pound. We knew you was coming, and we had some clarts to mess 'em about on the flanks."
"It's too bad they broke loose," muttered a Halveric private, after what they did last year.
"Too many of 'em," said the corporal. "We mauled 'em enough. They'll be wary of us a while. Besides, let 'em go tell their master they were beat again. Enough times running away like that, and they won't be good for anything, nor the ones they tell the story to, neither."
By that night, the enemy camp was dismantled. Everything else was piled and burned. A great fire that leapt into the dark and told everyone for miles around that the enemy's camp was gone. Pox had a share marked to her in the account books. Her recruits were recruits no longer. They had all been promoted. When they marched the next morning, Pox found herself moved up in the column. She was sorry about those whose death and injuries gave her the place, but she liked seeing ahead. All along the way she saw evidence of the enemy's flight, broken weapons, blood-stained clothing and armor, and bodies. Not all had been killed by Clarts or Halverics, as the wounds showed. By mid-afternoon, they reached the next tower to the west. A black and yellow banner flew from its peak, and a hail of arrows met them when they ventured closer. Their assault failed, and the two companies camped around the walls. The Clarts had ridden afar ahead to scout the tower beyond and returned with the news that it too was held by an enemy force. At dawn the next day, Pox saw about 50 black-clad fighters come over the wall, barely visible in the dim light. She yelled an alarm and darted forward. An arrow glanced off her helmet. The archers were awake in the tower. She threw up her shield and plunged on with the rest of the sentries as the camp came awake behind her. For a few desperate minutes, the sentries were outnumbered and hard-pressed. Simultaneously, enemy troops tried a sally from the south entrance, where the Halverics were just taking their positions for an assault. In minutes, a howling mass of fighters swayed back and forth in front of the gate. More and more of Siniava's troops poured out, as Pox heard later from one of the Halveric soldiers.
"We had to give back. They had us outnumbered. But then your duke brought two of your cohorts around, and it was stand and stick. That went on all morning, near enough. They couldn't break out, and we couldn't get in. Then they backed in a step at a time and got that portcullis down. I'll say this for Andrasat, they know how to build a fort."
Pox had been on the fringe of that battle, as one of the sentry ring on the other side. She met Barani in the cook tent.
"I'll tell you what, Pox," said Bara. "He's no fool, their captain. They came near breaking through more than once, and if they pick the right time, they might yet."
Pox mopped up the last of her beans with a crust of bread. "Not with the Halveric and the Duke. He won't surprise them. What I wonder about is how many more there are, at the next tower and the next. We can hold these, but more?"
"Andrasat has troops somewhere."
"What, 60 or so in the first tower, and maybe as many in the next one or two?
And they won't leave the towers unguarded." "No more than that. I heard Doran say something to Val about it this morning. Troops on the way, she said, and could be here this afternoon or tomorrow."
"I'll believe that, Bara, when I see it. Did you hear whether the Honeycat was in there?"
She cocked her head at the tower. "No, they all say not. And I haven't seen the banner his bodyguard carried last fall."
"I hope we don't waste too much time here, then. I wonder where that scum is."
"And what troops he has. All we can do is hope the Clarts don't miss anything."
"If he's clear off east, back towards Sorellan or those other cities, we could wander around here all season and never catch him."
Bara shrugged. "That's the Duke's business, not yours."
Pox stood up, and Bara eyed her.
"Are you upset about anything in particular? More than Kana and Sabin?"
"That, and... Bara, you know what he did to some of the prisoners last year?"
Bara nodded.
"We found a set of tools in one of the tents. I just want to be sure we do kill him.
But his army'd still be...
Pox shook her head. No, I don't think they'll be the same, even if there's much army left. I think it's his doing.
Maybe.
Bara turned to greet Notslin, coming from the serving line, and Pox waved and went back to her station. The rest of that day, the two forces did not change their positions. The Andrasat troops arrived mid-morning the next day. Pox thought they looked much more professional than the city militia she'd seen. They numbered just over 1,000, organized into 4 cohorts, each with 200 foot and 50 horse. Pox watched as the Duke and the Halveric rode out to meet them. The Andrasat troops moved into siege positions, and the mercenaries withdrew a space.
I heard we march in the morning, said Vic, as he and Pox lugged tent poles from one camp to another.
I hope so, said Pox. That group can handle the tower without us.
They do look good, conceded Vic. But why do you suppose they make their cohorts so big? They can't be as flexible.
Huh. If we had that many men, we might find 4 units easier to move than... Pox wrinkled her brows, trying to think how many it would be.
10, said Vic smugly. I wish we had. Then nobody could stand against us.
Nobody's going to. Pox grunted as they heaved the poles up in their new holes. I hope we don't have to raise all the tents for only one night.
I don't think so.
Vic rubbed his sunburnt nose.
I'd like to know how many troops Siniava has, altogether.
Not enough to stop us, said Pox grimly.
I hope not. But look, Pox, if he could send 800 or 1,000 up here, and he's not with them, he must have another army someplace, and his city's garrisoned. He could have a much bigger army than the Duke's put together.
That's true. Pox frowned. Well, if it is...
We'll do like the man with a barrel of ale, said Vic with a grin.
What's that?
Don't tell me you never heard that. It's old, Pox.
I never did, tell me.
Well, there was a man famous for what he could down at one swallow. At a market fair, he won lots of free ale by betting that he could drink this jug or that, or a skin of wine, at one draft. Soon he was famous for miles around, and no one would bet. Then he went on a journey with a brother of his, and they stopped at an inn. His brother started bragging on what he could do, and the long and the short of it is that the innkeeper asked him to wager. Well, he looked around the room and saw no pot or jug he couldn't drain. He agreed to take but one swallow to empty any ale pot in the room or give up all his silver. But the innkeeper had his own tricks and pulled aside a curtain by the bar, and there was a barrel half full of ale. Of course, the man said it was no pot, but the others around said it was. And there were more of them, and they were armed. The man knew he was trapped, and he was angry besides. So he walked over and tried to lift it, and of course it was too heavy. The innkeeper told him to kneel down and drink from the bunghole. Actually, he said worse than that, laughing all the while, and the man was so angry he could nearly fly. So, no, he said, and I drink my ale standing, as any man may, he said, and he rammed a hole in the bottom and let the ale run out until he could lift it and drink the rest, in one swallow. His brother held the innkeeper off in the meantime with a sword off the wall, and when he had finished, he said, "A pot's what you can lift in your hand, innkeeper, and any fool who can't tell a pot from a barrel might sell a barrel of ale for the price of a pot." Then the townsman laughed, and not just because of his strong arm, and made the innkeeper pay up. And he and his brother made their way on the road alive and no poorer. So now, where I grew up, if anyone takes on too much, we say he must be like the man with a barrel of ale, cut the trouble down to his size before swallowing it.
Pox nodded, laughing, and Vic went on.
This is letting some of the ale out of Siniava's barrel. He lost more than 600 men last fall, and he'll lose these, and the rest in Andrasat, say 800 more. You can't pull that many well-trained troops out of a hat, you know. However many he's got, this will hurt.
I hope so, said Pox.